So hi everybody, today I'm interviewing Mr. Chris Elphick from Breadfruit Consulting. So Chris is a gentleman that I met through some of my contacts in Vanuatu where I was travelling there recently. He's involved with VLab and a few other organisations trying to help entrepreneurs or the entrepreneurial spirit within these developing communities. This is a nuanced area and it's tricky at best, particularly for people from Western culture. Chris has his heart in the right place and has a body of experience which I think is really, really valuable. His insights are really interesting, and particularly for Australia as we pivot our attention to the South Pacific in a complex world, I think Chris is doing some on-the-ground work that is really, really important. So here's my interview with Chris Elphick. So Chris Elphick, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, look, and thank you in advance for the kind of backwards and forwards. You've been really helpful in me understanding what's happening in the South Pacific particularly. But I thought we might start off today and just get you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and we sort of move into the areas that we discussed earlier.
Okay. Thanks. It's good to be here. So I bill myself as one of the world's oldest young entrepreneurs.
I love it.
I've been around a long time. So I'm Chris, originally from the UK. I try not to talk about that very much, but emigrated with my partner to New Zealand, 25 years ago. In the UK, I left school when I was 16. I don't have an academic background. What I've always been interested in is, I suppose I learned about this idea of potential, what people could potentially become and do.
Right.
And a lot of the years in the UK, I was involved with disadvantaged young people. And I mean, a lot of that time, I was not that much older than them. I mean, my first ever job was in what they call an approved school.
Right.
It's like where you go before you go to prison.
Oh, okay.
And very, very disadvantaged young men. And I mean, I was only a few years older than them and basically totally green and new bugger all. But what I was interested in was a lot of those young men could do things like paint. They could make music.
Right.
They were also angry. They were also aggressive. And what do you do about that? Are they going to live their lives on the anger and aggression, and the chances are they'll end up incarcerated, or are they going to tap into whatever else is there? So that's always been my interest, really.
Okay.
I mean, I started out life seeing the private sector as the enemy. I came through sort of left-wing political thinking. I still do have left-wing political thinking. And the private sector was all out to get us and screw everybody.
Right.
And it was only when I met a woman called Anita Roddick. You know, Anita was the founder of a company called The Body Shop.
Oh, yeah.
Perfume, soap manufacturers.
Yep.
And it's only really when I met her did I start to get any notion of this idea of social enterprise and that business and society could come together.
Okay, fantastic.
Which you said. Anyway, sorry, I was rambling on a bit.
Yep.
So basically, went to New Zealand, emigrated. We Kiwis, and about seven. So I've been working in the Pacific from New Zealand. Then about 7 years ago, moved over full time to Vanuatu.
Okay. So there's some really interesting stuff there. So I guess the social enterprise stuff interests me as well. And I guess there's an overlap there. Why don't you give us a little bit of an idea of what the current situation is with regards to, because you're in Vanuatu, so let's talk about Vanuatu specifically and then maybe a little bit more generally about what's happening in the South Pacific and what the, because there's a big geopolitical sort of push in the area and there's a lot of, I guess, resources being thrown into the region. What's happening on the ground and what's the reality in terms of people trying to make a living for themselves at what I would describe as, and if I'm framing this wrong, dudes, like pull me up, but you know, it's sustenance sort of sustaining the community type type entrepreneurship. It's not, nobody's doing a laser mousetrap, you know, in their garage sort of thing, but it's really about survival entrepreneurship or doing something, you know, with an opportunity that presents itself. You've got some land that your dad, you inherited from your dad, or, you know, you've come over as a worker and come back with some money. What's the reality at the moment in terms of what people are facing?
Who's going to be watching this?
Not a lot at the moment, Chris, I assure you.
No, okay. So, Vanuatu, small South Pacific island country, 80-something islands in Melanesia, sandwiched between Solomons and Fiji. But I think we're 42, 43 years old. We just celebrated Constitution Day last week, and that was 2 years before independence when the Constitution was written.
Yep.
We've had 27 prime ministers in 44 years.
Nice.
That gives you a little bit of a flavour of the issue around political leadership.
Right.
So it was a colonised country. The systems all came from French and British colonial systems, and so we have all the normal ministries that you have in Australia or New Zealand or the UK, but we're a tiny country.
Yep.
I mean, we're, 400,000 people? I don't know what the population of, what's the population of Melbourne or Brisbane?
I've got 400,000 in my street.
Yes, I know. But the country has been moving on through that time. In terms of my take and my focus is really around with this whole word entrepreneur. As obviously, I mean, when I started working with people with ideas, I had no idea these words existed. but it's obviously quite a popular word. There's some key issues, really. I mean, I think politically people are pretty tired. They don't feel that there's much going to happen on the political scene that's going to help them. So either you get a job in the public service, because the most secured job and the biggest employer, of course, is the public service.
Sure.
But you could be sitting in the same seat for 25 years.
Right. Okay.
And what's happening to your brain? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one possibility. And a lot of people actually do want their kids to do that.
Right.
Because a lot of families will see that's security, yeah? If I get my son or daughter in one of the public departments, then they're going to keep me because they're never going to be sacked. They're going to be in a secure job.
Right.
It might be mind-numbingly boring, but that's another issue. So that's one side of it. That's part of a picture. You've got an education system that's not free at any level. So people have to earn money to educate their kids at every level.
Right.
You know, I mean, New Zealand, I guess it's probably similar in Australia, but in New Zealand, there's free education all the way through. And people still complain.
Yeah. Oh, there's free education, but then you load up the tertiary students with debt here, you know, eye-watering debt in some cases.
That's right. That's it. But here, of course, there is no. So one of the driving factors is money to fund your kids' education.
Right.
I mean, that's a very clear fact. Another driving factor is we're in the cyclone area. So every year the country gets hit by cyclones, so there's very often a lot of effort having to go in all the time to rebuild, renew.
Okay.
So this is all part of the picture, yeah?
Yep.
I mean, Port Vila is the capital. You've got one or two other biggest towns on some of the islands, and then it's an island community.
Yep.
I guess there's two things that come into this picture strongly. One are the donors. The country is dependent on outside money.
Mm-hmm.
Australia, New Zealand, US, and China.
Mm-hmm. As in the money that they're that they're granting or they're investing in infrastructure? Is that the sort of money you're talking about?
Yeah. Part of them, yeah. I mean, I guess we would say, I mean, all the young entrepreneurs I know would be very focused on trying to create a sustainable future for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that their view is the only people who are ever going to do that are them.
Right, okay.
Sustainability politically is about dependence. And there's lots of stuff written about this.
Yep.
And there's lots of stuff about the new form of colonization and all that. Yeah. And we won't necessarily get into all the politics of
that. Yeah, sure, sure. So I guess we're going to bump into the politics.
But one of the challenges, of course, is because people know money is coming.
Mm.
If you take something like a cyclone, I mean, last week I ran some training around resilience, yeah, and risk.
Mm-hmm.
And actually getting your head around preparing.
Yep.
Because you can't stop a cyclone, but you can prepare.
Sure.
And you can do your best to get yourself, yeah. People buy that and they get into that. But on the other side of that, there's an issue of saying, well, we go through it and what will happen is someone's going to come and give us money.
Mm.
So how much effort am I going to put in to this resilience on one hand, because I know that somebody will come along and rebuild our school. Or now, the problem is that might take a long time.
Sure.
And of course, there's all sorts of issues then about whether you're in the right place and you get on all that.
Yeah, okay.
So donor influence is important.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's happened over the last few years is the seasonal work program.
Yep.
Yeah, I was in New Zealand when the program started in New Zealand, I think in about 2007.
Yep.
And I was involved with training New Zealand farmers,
mm-hmm.
who were going to be receiving Pacific Island workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with the farmers on culture and dealing with racism and issues.
Right, okay. But
because at that time, the links weren't that... New Zealand had strong links with its own countries like Cook Islands, but not necessarily the rest of the Pacific.
Gotcha. So if
now,
we...
since then, of course, that... Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, so if we were to unbundle this from, you know, a developing capability around, you know... we'll call it entrepreneurship, but I guess entrepreneurship within the context of these, what we call developing economies, and in a lot of cases, they're not really developing, but they're kind of staying where they are. And people, as you rightly say, are trying to make the best for themselves. It sounds like, I guess, create the best situation for themselves. And I guess some people are more entrepreneurial than others. So, you know, some people might gravitate to, you know, more secure, but, you know, mind-numbing work in some cases. And others maybe, you know, have some level of privilege and, you know, they get good education and then, you know, they're a lawyer, they're a doctor, whatever they are. And then there's somewhere in the middle. So the people that have got some sort of a drive, it sounds like the challenges are, from a basic infrastructure point of view, there is a layer around education, and literacy, I guess, sounds like.
Yep.
And then, you know, over the top of that, I guess there is a cultural layer, if I'm not mistaken, where, you know, there's, you know, when I was there, I heard about the big man kind of factor. So people like to be considered in a particular way within the community. And that may, I mean, I connected the dots on this, but, correct me if I'm wrong, where they might... they couldn't tolerate doing something wrong. Like, you know, here, if I stuff up a particular project or a business or whatever, you know, I own it and, you know, and I learn from it and then I go again and I try and improve that whatever I'm doing. This podcast is a great example of things I've stuffed up on that, and you saw that firsthand, right?
Yeah.
So there's education, there's the cultural piece, but I guess then there's the forces around, you know, money raining from the sky, and the perception that, you know, someone, some mysterious, you know, creature from another country is going to provide. So maybe I don't need to be as resilient, or maybe I don't need to, you know, worry about creating something sustainable for myself and my community within. Would that be a fair kind of summary of the reality?
Yeah. And I mean, we don't necessarily like to use the word, but corruption comes into all this. And corruption might be at a very small level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might be at the level of, well, we'll help you educate your kids if you do this. And people know that that's very much part of the way things are done. I mean, you're absolutely right about education. And the other issue, of course, is health.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, people like me, expats, they can afford to pay for private healthcare. And there's a number of private French and English-speaking doctors around.
Yep.
Local people can't. And the facilities in the hospitals. While ministers, government ministers, are given two new cars, the hospital is lacking basic facilities.
Right, okay.
So that sets a bit of a mindset. I think one of the things I feel as an outsider now, I'm an outsider and I've only been going back and forward for 12 years, so there's no way, I do my best to listen, but there's no way can I ever really get inside the culture too deeply. But one of the things I do feel is a consequence of all of this is a low level of self-confidence in so many people.
Right.
There's quite a high level of knowledge, I mean, people do go and they study and they get their qualifications. But when it comes to actually the confidence to apply that knowledge, as you would require out of an entrepreneur, someone to actually go and do things, the level is incredibly low. And that's linked to what you described as the big man thing as well. I mean, don't forget, we still have a culture where women bow down when they walk past men. They lower their heads.
Really? I didn't notice that. Well, actually, let's dive into that too, because I think that, you know, when the West comes over and says, okay, you know, for their own reasons, everyone's got their self-interest, right? So, you know, Australia's got its self-interest and New Zealand's got its self-interest. The Americans are there. The Chinese are there. That, you know, everyone's pushing, you know, and you know, there's a feeding frenzy at the government layer and whatever, you know. But I know that some of the money that comes across comes with, you know, strings attached, and one says, okay, you know, you've got to understand about, you know, equality and, you know, the rights of women and all that sort of thing. Of course, and you know, from the West, this is a no-brainer as far as we're concerned.
Absolutely.
You know, really, really, really important. But are we... it sounds like there are some more fundamental things, like if women are still walking down the street lowering their head, and you know, and my partner saw, you know, she didn't feel safe in a lot of cases, you know, I mean, you feel relatively safe walking down the street in Melbourne, you know, certainly, you know, like if you're in Singapore, like you know, you walk down the street, it doesn't matter what time it is, you know, you're going to be pretty safe to a degree here in Melbourne, of course, too, but certainly not there after a particular time, you know. If culturally there's that ingrained in their, you know, in their thinking over, you know, generations, is it that sort of thinking legitimately received? Because potentially they're going to tap into a whole other resource in terms of, you know, female entrepreneurs who kind of see things differently and see new opportunities that a bloke wouldn't see, and can go and benefit them, their community, their family, and their own, you know, financial well-being.
Of course, a lot of the entrepreneurs are women. Lot of the work that's going on. We're running a program at the moment, which has got, I think, just under 50 participants. They're nearly all women, and they're all small farmers, backyard farming, growing enough to sustain the family. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, the word family means a lot of people. Yeah, so not just talking about the small nuclear family.
Right.
A lot of people. But then, of course, and they're also growing enough to sell. I mean, in terms of behavior, you put a low level of confidence next to poverty and not having enough money. Mm. But at the same time, people are all accessing mobile phones and therefore accessing images of another way of life.
Right. Yeah. Right.
In terms of what people wear, how they live, the language, their hairstyle.
Yeah.
What's that going to lead to?
Yeah.
And I don't think it has anything to do with being in Vanuatu.
I recognized
that in Glasgow years ago.
Yeah.
Put those combinations together and you're going to end up with increased robberies, more violence.
Yeah, people wanting stuff.
People want these things.
Yeah. Can I ask?
Absolutely.
So you know, we use the term entrepreneur. It sounds like at one end of the spectrum, some people are just creating jobs for themselves. So, you know, they can't get hired or they aren't. And then the other end, how many are actual setting up a business where people are being hired and potentially could grow a sustainable company sort of thing?
The number's increasing. I mean, we have this organization that I'm part of called VLab, which is about, so we've introduced the notion of ideation. That's where we started from a few years ago.
Right.
And that was deliberately introduced to start people, to help people build their confidence in having an idea. Because,
mm-hmm.
What we know is people do have ideas. What they don't have is the confidence to talk about them to other people,
mm-hmm.
because they believe it's not their role, they're too young, they're a woman, they're not in the right strata in their village, so they've got to keep their mouth shut.
Right. Is it a caste sort of level? Is it, or is it just, you know, stage of life?
Yes,
sort of?
Wouldn't use that language, but yes, there's a tribal level,
right?
And there are chiefs. I mean, this is not to say this is all bad. I don't see people starving on the streets.
Sure.
I don't see people sleeping in doorways or begging. Occasionally begging, not very much. No. I don't see that side of it. But on the other hand, it's very much subsistence as well.
Mm.
But of course, as I said earlier on, along comes a major problem like a cyclone. People know that will be followed by help. By money and food stuff.
I
think with the entrepreneur side, we focus a lot around just helping people get to a point where they're confident enough to express ideas, and we create these safe spaces for people to do that. Because I think it's really important I don't paint a picture here that it's all bad. I mean, they're obviously very loving families. There are families that support their kids in a very positive way and make sure those kids will go on to be as confident as they can.
Yep.
But as I said earlier on, when you're poor, when you haven't got very much, when you see your minister having two cars and you can't even afford to educate your kids, what does that do to your brain?
Yeah, you become cynical. Absolutely. VLab.
What is affecting the entrepreneurial economy is no doubt is this seasonal work program. We've got over. I think we're somewhere around about 10,000, maybe more, people at the moment away in Australia and New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
and that number's going up. So what that's doing is, I mean, it's got its downside. It's splitting families. But on the positive, those people are seeing a new approach to living. Yeah, they're seeing entrepreneurs in Brisbane or Melbourne or wherever they wherever they happen to be.
Right.
And there's a lot of political discussions around the ups and downs of the program, but people are coming back with money, with ideas, with a newfound enthusiasm. And some of the lucky ones have linked into very good employers in New Zealand and Australia who are supporting them.
Right. Okay. Well, that's
not all like that. But I mean,
Look,
but
maybe
that's a positive. It very much is.
So maybe we expand on that a little bit, because we've spoke about that in the past. That sounded really, really interesting, because I know some of the downsides are, you know, you pull 10,000 people out of Vanuatu to do seasonal work here. You have a labor problem on the other side. And you have,
we do indeed.
Ironically, you have tourists going over insisting that their latte's done quite right, and, you know, it's not. And, yeah, you know, they're frustrated, but, you know, their fruit's being picked back at home. So, you know, But we've talked about the problems. I think, you know, in a pretty fair way. Let's talk about some of the solutions. So this seasonal work problem, we were talking the other week about a potential program that's onshore here in Australia or onshore in New Zealand that would prepare these young men and women, I assume. I've seen mainly men in the departure lounges, but.
Yeah, since we mainly men going to Australia, there's quite a lot of women going on in New Zealand. The New Zealand scheme is slightly shorter, so it's
okay.
It's maybe a little bit more family friendly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on what, you know, those programs could look like, and how where you think the benefits, you know, is it education, is it mind shift, is it, you know, support through money? I think I suggested, you know, maybe the incentives could be, you know, if you are doing these programs and you go back with, you know, a pocket full of money and you do allocate it into something like a VLAB program that leads into, you know, a real, you know, business, or at least a new circumstance for that person, you can incentivate that with, you know, another few thousand bucks in their pocket, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my view about it is that, there's still a lot of work to be done to really capitalize on the benefit of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely right about some of the negatives. And the politics of the thing we could discuss all day long. But the reality is that it is offering people the opportunities to go.
Yep.
One of the challenges, of course, is I put myself, if I was a 22, 23 year old, and I know that I'm going to get to go to Australia for the first time ever in my life, first time out of my island. Now, to do that, I've got to go on pre-departure workshops run by the Department of Labor, and I'm going to be told all these things, and I'm going to be told about how I should manage my money, and I'm going to be told about being an entrepreneur when I come back. Am I going to listen to that? I'll go to the workshops. Actually, the minute I get off that plane,
hey, I'm on.
I'm not going to be thinking about that stuff.
No, that's right.
So there's a lot of, and I've got friends who deliver on the pre-departure stuff. So there's a lot of workshops.
Yep.
I'm just not sure, really. And some of the older people who go, it's very different. Yeah, they've been for years.
Yep.
They have a very clear strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we do work at VLAB with some people who are away on the program, and with their partners who are back here at home,
yeah,
running businesses. So we work with both, so keep in touch with them.
Yeah.
Some employers are really good, and I mean, some employers, I think, do take on much more than just an employer role. Yeah.
Right.
You know, they actually recognize that they can make a big difference in helping the people they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that won't be true in every case. I mean, we are trying to explore how you can actually make more of these opportunities, help people make more of these opportunities. I mean, the Australian scheme is up to, I think it's 3 years. They can do it. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And it's certainly a long time if the family splits up. I think that's a lot of issues, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been working with some people in the Solomons, just talking about the idea of how do you keep in touch with a group while they're away?
Right.
So they're not just kept in touch through their family systems, but actually kept in touch through an entrepreneurial approach. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't mean giving them homework every week or any of this sort of stuff.
But well, I guess just, ultimate, ultimately, you know, these initiatives, you know, around the world of entrepreneurship, you know, it's another word for being self-reliant, having agency, having some, you know, being a contributing member, you know, to a real economy. So there's, you know, the economy that's kind of only there because, you know, money's coming from helicopters, and there's actually people that need to buy eggs and people that need to buy, you know opportunities, whatever services or products you can produce. I know that there are some people exporting kava from Vanuatu into the States. You know, I wonder how big that market is. But, you know, people are having a crack. You know, I met a couple of sort of, men about town who were doing stuff, which I thought was interesting. But it, they were street savvy. You know, they had some sort of benefit of an education. They were articulate. Their English was good. You know, and they could operate. But I know that, so one of the things that I was astounded was, Bislama is obviously the national language, but the English, language skills aren't really where they need to be able to be, working in a global economy, you know, and to be able to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a policy decision,
there's
right?
There's lots of, it is, yes, yeah, and there's a huge lot of those challenges,
that
people have got to focus on.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what we find, with the entrepreneurs that I see coming through, I would guess they're probably around the 25, 35 age range.
Right.
There were a few a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it agricultural based.
Yep.
There's a lot of support at the moment on thinking about planting different crops and adding value to fish you catch and all of those things, which is all good. One of the problems, of course, in a country like Vanuatu is it's tiny. And how's it ever going to compete?
Yep.
Donors come in, well-meaning, and they talk about access to the markets, and they talk about upskilling people to knowledge of marketing. What are they going to do? How are they going to do that?
How on
earth are they going to, even with Fiji, how are they going to compete with Fiji, let alone a bigger economy?
Yeah, sure.
It's really hard, yeah?
My impression is there are success stories. Like, do you know of success stories that could be celebrated more? Because I said, I'm imagining that if I see if I'm 20 and I see a guy who's 30 and he's done something really interesting, it could inspire innovative, approaches.
That's a lot. Yeah,
and do they get? Are they celebrating?
There are.
Are they?
They celebrate them. Organisations like VLAB will celebrate them.
Mm-hmm.
The local newspaper carries a sort of business review once a month, and that carries stories of local people. There's some interesting. There's quite a lot of success stories around food.
Yep.
People using island food, but creating maybe slightly different take on it and more modern dress and clothing is interesting. You know, the mama dresses that the women wear.
Mm-hmm.
There are now young entrepreneurs who are taking that and making it more modern.
Right.
For young women to wear. And so there are quite a lot of those successes.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting when we look at success in terms of what does that mean for them? What's the goal?
Right. Good question. So what does it mean?
A lot of entrepreneurs will probably think that was about having a good bank balance and the ability to travel and so on. My guess is here it's not about that. It's about it's about sustaining your family.
Right. Okay. So
rebuilding a house if it falls down, being able to educate your kids, hopefully being able to handle any health bills that come along.
Mm.
I think that's the goal in lots of cases.
Okay.
But that I think that shouldn't be seen as a negative. I mean, that's a huge thing for so many people. You know, when you think that their starting point is
I was just going to say that
so
too.
Low. For people to be able to achieve that. And, of course, remember what I said earlier on. When we're talking about family, we're not talking about a Western-style family.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a family that has cousins, brothers everywhere.
Yeah.
So families are very, very large.
Yeah.
And
sounds like the Greeks.
And people... it does. And people have to contribute.
Yep.
So every time there's of course, this is another cost all the time. Every time there's a wedding and a funeral, people have to contribute. And if you happen to be near the top in your family, say the elder, especially the elder brother, you're paying out a lot of money.
Right.
So for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's about saying, well, where am I going to get this from?
Yep.
I'm not going to get an employer that's going to pay me enough. So the only thing I can do is do it myself.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a different style of entrepreneurial thinking, isn't it, than someone who says, right, I'm going to create a brand and it's now going to become worldwide in 5 years.
Okay. So
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. So if you had a magic wand for Vanuatu and maybe more broadly the South Pacific, and you could get three wishes, what would you change?
I think the education system, in terms of focusing on people and empowerment and confidence building, rather than just giving them instruction.
Gotcha.
I think that would be a huge change.
Right.
I think the opportunities for inter-island, one of the challenges, of course, you've got 83 inhabited islands, you've got these five provinces. The cost of moving materials and goods around is really expensive.
Right.
So that is a disincentive to being an entrepreneur.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you might grow some fantastic garlic on Tana. The cost of moving it
is very difficult.
Prohibitive.
Yeah, I saw that on Tana when went to the volcano. And the hoteliers were complaining that they weren't able to get supplies and, much less labor. But certainly things like garlic and
in terms of local thing, I mean, I guess one of the other things would be about diet. I mean, the increased use of white rice and so on is just increasing diabetes.
Right, yeah.
And that's killing off the population.
Right.
So these things don't actually... So it's quite hard to be an entrepreneur if you're unhealthy.
Yeah, of course.
If you're actually not fit to do it.
So there's there's an education piece there. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, we're...
And then we have and of course we have to think about the two main sectors, tourism and agriculture.
Mm.
I mean, there is a lot going on here in agriculture. I mean, the department is quite active. There's quite a lot of work with farmers, helping them look at different forms of planting, different forms of compost. There's quite a lot going on with hydroponics.
Right.
So all this is all good stuff. How much of that actually finds its way to a market that actually results in a good income for the entrepreneurs is another question. I mean, one of the challenges, you talk to hotel owners, for example, they would all say that they want to use local. I mean, I think generally they would all want to use local produce.
Sure.
The challenge for them is they can't get it on a regular regular level of quality. Regular supply
consistent
and a proper quality level just doesn't work.
Yeah,
because the thinking of a lot of the growers is short term. Done well with that field of taro. Now I've got the money. I've paid my kids' school fees. Don't need to plant anymore at the moment.
Have a bit of a lie down. Well, yeah, like that's telling, isn't it? That's the mindset. And look, who am I to say that that's not right for them?
Absolutely.
You know, so.
But I guess in things we're trying to do in VLab and Be Smart, it's about challenging that mindset. And there are people. I mean, the numbers are increasing.
Yeah.
Go back to your question. I guess the other thing I would want to see would be a political system that's entrepreneur friendly.
Right.
I think we have to think very seriously about how the politics of the country supports the local economy.
Okay.
Doesn't at the moment, really.
Right. Because I guess they're kind of distracted with the conversations they're having from abroad, I guess, and all the eyes on them. So they're kind of enamored with how important they are right now, and sort of looking down at their constituents and actually helping their people kind of isn't kind of the most pressing thing. They've got two cars, they've got money coming in, you know, there's always tomorrow.
You said it.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right. That would be my take on it. And also, the politicians come out of the same culture, of course.
Right.
And I don't think they're, personally, I don't think they're any more confident than anybody else, honestly. And
sure.
I don't think they understand the role of leadership.
Right, right.
I've always been attracted by Mandela's statement about the leader, when things are going well, the leader should be at the back. And when there's a crisis, the leader needs to be at the front. But of course, the leadership here is the opposite way around.
Right.
Yes.
I'm
sure it's not just here either.
I think a lot of countries suffer from that, you know.
I think
that's a really good place to stop. Thank you for these insights, Chris. I think they're really, really valuable. I think it's a conversation I'd love to have again, you know, at some point in time, maybe next year, and see how things are developing. I would love to see some of those programs kind of, you know, synergize a little bit what's happening with, you know, New Zealand and Australia and the South Pacific. You know,
yeah.
they're our neighbors. We talk about understanding and having some empathy for and cultural sensitivity to what's going on.
Absolutely.
And coming in over the top with, you know, look, our way is the best way, you know, it's actually ruined something very, very beautiful in one way. There is something very, very valuable there. But if we can help people be more resilient and help people, you know, be more self-sustaining and have some agency in their lives, you know, I think that's a universal thing. That, you know, so thank you for the work you do. It sounds like you.
Another. Can I just one more quick thing? Just
sure.
Popped into my head.
Sure.
Something we did last year. We facilitated a group of entrepreneurs from the Solomons come together with a group of entrepreneurs from Vanuatu.
Okay.
They did it online.
Right.
But over a course of weeks, they met and debated cultural issues. They right. debated challenges that affect them as entrepreneurs
right.
around their culture, because the cultures are very similar.
Right.
And I think the takeaway from that is the more we can do that, you know, so not with the donor in the middle as a referee,
right.
but actually allow people to have the conversation direct with each other, because I know out of that several of those people have continued to find some way of working together.
Right.
Interesting. Now that's a very small start, but like from very small things that big things grow. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, why don't you tell the listeners who how they get in touch with you if they're interested in you know, reaching out to you and about your business and where they could find you.
Okay, so our business is called Breadfruit Consulting. We like the name, so we don't do anything with breadfruit, but it's really yummy if you've never eaten it. And my email address is chris@breadfruitconsulting.com.
Okay.
I have a phone, 678-55-00-56. But the best thing would be an email. You can find us online. But I'm more than willing to have a conversation with anyone. I like talking, as you can tell. And it's good to share the ideas. Yeah,
absolutely.
We share ideas. Yeah, we're going to come up with new ones and they're going to grow. And this is what we're trying to encourage here. Yeah, we're just trying to encourage people to get together and informally share ideas rather than this notion that education is I've got to sit here
right.
and listen to someone telling me.
Gotcha. Absolutely.
There you go.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay.
And look, you know, I hope over the next 6 or 12 months your Greek language skills improve because we need to probably include a little bit of Greek that you're trying to learn there, and we'll do a bilingual podcast.
That.
All right, mate. Thank you very much. Enjoy your day, and appreciate you doing this today. Thank you.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed it. Take care. You have a good day too.
No worries. See you, mate.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so that was Chris Selfick. I hope you enjoyed that. I think entrepreneurship for developing economies is a very important area, and Chris is right in the middle of that. I expect to interview him again at some point. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next time. This podcast is brought to you by Christo Partners, strategic advisors to assist you in commercializing your innovations. If you have an opportunity you seek to bring to market and need help with either going to market, connecting with universities to access technology, or raising capital, or any other matter, contact us on hello@christopartners.com. This podcast is also brought to you by FinHawk, digital risk advice and services. FinHawk offers a range of services, including their B2RF, a cybersecurity breach readiness recovery service that anticipates and readies businesses to respond proactively to a cybersecurity incident. In an era where cyber threat persists, the genuine test services post-data breach. FinHawk offers a confidential service to streamline post-breach response to reduce impact and ensure the rapid resumption of operations. Contact FinHawk at hello@finhawk.com.au.